This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. Coming up on this week's show, the state of Maryland took a strong stand on the issue of pornography, and Family Research Council's Peter Sprigg will join us a little later to explain. Also, in a shocking decision, an Ohio juvenile court judge removed a child from his parents' custody because they didn't support his desire to be transgendered. We'll talk about that with Aaron Baer. Also, in the wake of the deadly high school shooting in Florida, Tony shares his thoughts on gun control. But first, on Tuesday of this week, Reverend Billy Graham met Jesus face to face. After a storied career as an evangelist, as well as being a counselor to numerous presidents, he spent the final years of his life at home in North Carolina. James Robison, founder and president of Life Outreach International, joined Tony to talk about his mentor, Dr. Billy Graham.
James, welcome to Washington Watch once again.
Well, thank you, Tony. And it's, as Billy Graham's daughter said to me this morning in a text very early, it's a glorious day. Dad is seeing Jesus and Mother.
Yeah.
Right now.
I was actually texting with Franklin today, and I see that the legacy that Billy Graham has left is not just in what he built and what he did, but it's who he invested his life in. I mean, I know Ann very well. I know Franklin well, work with them. They are uncompromising in the gospel. But you also are a product of that.
Well, he began to reach out to me when I was 19. And this week, Betty and I celebrate our 55th wedding anniversary. Within 6 months after we were married, and I was preaching, and the meetings were so blessed of God that we actually were in a citywide crusade in Houston that extended a week, and Billy heard about it and immediately began to just get tapes of me preaching and made it clear that he believed I was really anointed. And then he, of all things, set up our ministry organization. And he said, you're going to need a 501c3. You're going to need this. And he set it up right to think that he did that. And then he stayed in touch with me throughout my ministry. We became very close. He actually, Tony, commissioned me to win Franklin to Christ as a rebellious teenager when Franklin was in Texas at Laterno College and I was at East Texas Baptist University, 20 minutes away. And he told me Franklin loves to fish and hunt, and he said, I know you do. Why don't you take him, do some stuff? I made several appointments with Franklin. He broke every one of them. As a matter of fact, after he became converted, which Billy told me about that in a round of golf that we were playing together when I was in my early 30s, and he started crying. He's sitting on the golf cart, and he's tearing up. He said, let me tell you about my boy. And he told me about the conversion of Franklin. It was glorious. And I said, well, I failed, didn't I, Billy? He said, well, because I asked Franklin, why did you keep breaking all those dates to go fishing and stuff? And he said, well, I was getting drunk and smoking cigarettes. And Billy said, well, it's a change. And he is absolutely transformed. And we were blessed to begin helping Franklin with Samaritan's Purse the moment he took over the leadership of that organization. And we stayed close. But Billy invested in me. And we were friends. And matter of fact, you look on the stream today, stream.org, you'll see a picture of me and Betty sitting in his home just a few years ago there in North Carolina. And Billy was saying throughout the day, I want to go. I want to go be with Ruth. I'm ready to go. And there was no question he was. And I know that Ruth texted me this morning that, you know, it is a glorious day because Dad's with Jesus and with Mother. And what an impact he made. I do want to tell you something a moment about a change that came in my life that I think you're witnessing the importance of,
mm-hmm.
and that's spiritual unity.
He was criticized in his early days, in the 50s and 60s, for who he hung around with. I mean, he went across denominational lines. Evangelicals and the conservatives did not really want to do much with charismatics, and you know, he broke that mold.
Well, and he even had Catholics who were encouraged to come and even had some of their leaders sit on the platform. Well, you know, Jerry Fall and I, well, and I were very close, and Jerry was sure, man, we got to talk to Billy, you know. Well, I did because I was close to him. And I actually scolded him. I said, why do you do this? And Billy just looked at me and he said, do you know the people you're telling me to avoid? I said, I don't know them. He said, well, I do. I've spent time with them. And he said, I have found that there's so many of them who love Jesus. And he said this. He said, I could not hold a crusade outside the United States if it were not for Pentecostals and Charismatics. Well, that kind of set me back. But I actually took his advice. It led to one of the greatest transformations that a person could ever experience. Because I began to go to the leaders. One of the first was Oral Roberts. But I went right down the line and began to meet with him. And Tony, invariably, we would be weeping together. Oral said, I was lonely. I was cut off from even my own people. I was cut off from by the Methodists. And he said, you coming to me today, it's just one of the greatest things that ever happened. He's just crying. And I began to encourage leaders to come and meet with Oral. I began to get, you know today, Tony, because you've been in many meetings with me. I have been blessed to bring leaders together across all denominational lines. And that's the council that has surrounded the president, and you watch that happen. Mm-hmm. And you watch my effort to get them to sit at the table of reason and pray together. So it was Billy Graham that led me to literally begin to spend time with people I'd talked to avoid. Now, I've never, and neither did Billy, and neither will Franklin. We don't compromise the Word of God. We don't compromise principles. Right. And we'll recognize there may be some points of disagreement, but we can still be a healthy family that is reflecting the Father that we claim to know through Jesus Christ.
And in many ways, Billy Graham, in preaching the gospel, while he counseled presidents, he stayed nonpartisan. But in many ways, he laid the foundation for what we're seeing today in terms of the evangelical, if you will, kind of political influence that we're seeing around this president.
Well, what happened that was so dramatic, and we just heard someone on a large network make fun of someone for saying that they talk to God and God talks to them, when Jesus made it clear, my sheep hear my voice. And I write about this on the stream today. It's on the front of the stream. By the way, Ann Graham Lott sent everybody to the stream yesterday to read. She said one of the most powerful articles she's ever seen. And so you can read that on the stream. But here's what Billy did. He called me and Bill Bright, and he said, I stood in Red Square, and God told me that we have 1,000 days of freedom left in the United States. 1,000 days, 3 years. I know God told me that. And he called a prayer meeting, and Tony, that prayer meeting extended the life of freedom in this nation. Because he called a group of men, he asked me to get them to come to the meeting. And it was Pat Robertson, Bill Bright, Adrian Rogers, Charles Stanley, and my pastor, James Draper. We had a prayer meeting that led to Baptists actually realizing we needed a stronger leader than we had at the time. And God gave us a miracle in 1980.
And we're still living that miracle today. James Robinson, thank you so much for being with us today, my friend.
Tony, thank you for everything you do for the cause of Christ and for freedom. God bless you.
If you want to find out more about James Robinson or the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, head on over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, I want to invite you to be a part of keeping Washington Watch on the air by going to TonyPerkins.com and making a tax-deductible contribution. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with a look at the latest public health crisis.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. This is because transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. Yet even the federal government has stated that there is no evidence that gender reassignment surgery has improved health outcomes. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. Maryland is the latest state to declare pornography a public health crisis. Porn websites now constitute 30% of all web traffic, generating more hits than Netflix, Amazon, and Twitter combined. Joining Family Research Council President Tony Perkins is Peter Sprigg, Senior Fellow for Policy Studies at FRC.
Peter, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Peter, there is now an extensive body of research regarding the harms of pornography, and finally state legislators are taking note of that.
That's right. A number of states, I believe there are five states that have already passed resolutions declaring pornography to be a public health crisis. Maybe six, because I just saw a news story this morning that Florida adopted their resolution just yesterday. And the one in Maryland has been introduced in both houses of their state legislature. I've had the opportunity to testify in favor of it in both houses, and we hope that they will act in adopting such a resolution as well. But there is an increasing body of evidence showing that the reason to be opposed to pornography is not just because of moral concerns about what it depicts about sexuality, but the actual impact that it's having on our society.
Yeah. Utah being the first state, and as a result of that, actually I was involved in getting language into the RNC, the GOP platform, rather, at the RNC convention, and this is what the RNC platform states: pornography with its harmful effects, especially on children, has become a public health crisis that is destroying the lives of millions. We encourage states to continue to fight this public menace and pledge our commitment to children's safety and well-being. Finally, we're seeing this addressed. How are states going to get a handle on this, given the age of the Internet?
Well, it's a challenge, and that's why this is a little bit of an innovative approach to the issue, and I have to give a little shout out to our friends over at the National Center on Sexual Exploitation, who have kind of driven this approach. But by having a resolution, the idea is, as a first step at least, to raise public awareness about the harms of pornography, but to do so in an official sort of context, so that our legislators are acknowledging that this is a serious problem. It's probably a more difficult step to get prosecutors to actually begin prosecuting laws on obscenity, the laws that forbid obscenity. There's a misconception on the part of a lot of people that somehow pornography is legal because it's protected by free speech. Now, that may be true of some forms of softcore pornography, but the real hardcore pornography meets the legal definition of obscenity, and it is not legal. And yet, for decades, probably since the Reagan administration, we've really seen very little effort put forth on either the state or federal level to prosecute this activity, which is criminal in nature. It's a challenge in the time of the Internet. I mean, I think the Internet has made it so much easier to access pornography, and that's part of the reason why the harms are we're seeing the harms sort of escalate.
We're told, and we've heard for many years, even when you talk about the illegal obscenity that is there on the Internet and other sources, that it's a victimless crime. So what's the deal? So they break a few laws. It doesn't affect anybody.
Well, the interesting thing is, I think in this era of greater awareness of sexual harassment, sexual assault, and just general mistreatment of women by men, we should be aware of the role that pornography plays in promoting that. And again, where the research has shown that men who are consumers of pornography, a lot of people like of our generation who may think of pornography as Playboy centerfolds or something, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about very graphic, explicit films and videos of often very extreme forms of behavior, most of which are degrading to women. This cannot help but result in a culture and a society that degrades women in real life. And I think, you know, when we look at the Me Too movement and everything and ask ourselves, and I said this in my testimony, we ask ourselves, how did men get to be such pigs? The answer, at least in part, is they learned it from pornography.
Hmm. Peter, before we go, we're up against a break, but very quickly, you had a piece that you published today regarding Dr. Billy Graham, because it is through his ministry that you came to Christ.
That's right. I committed my life to Christ at a Billy Graham crusade in Boston in 1982. And so that was certainly a turning point in my life, and I will forever be grateful for his ministry.
Well, and we are too, for many reasons, but you're one of them. We're so glad to have you on the FRC team. Peter, you do a great job. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
If you want to find out more about Peter Sprigg or the Maryland decision, just head on over to tonyperkins.com and follow the links. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, and you can donate when you visit tonyperkins.com. We'll be right back with a look at the latest attack on the family by the courts right after this.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? Pornography fuels the sex trafficking industry. Each click of pornography creates a demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. Victims of sex trafficking are often coerced into having abortions. To learn more about how you can help stop this triple threat, go to frc.org/traffic.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. A ruling handed down last Friday by juvenile court judge Sylvia Hendon paved the way for a transgendered teenager to receive transition hormone therapy, but also grants custody to the boy's grandparents. Joining Tony to discuss this ruling is Aaron Baer, president of Citizens for Community Values.
Aaron, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, thanks for having me.
Aaron, this is a disturbing case that I think, regardless of the subject matter, people should be very concerned about a court moving to sever parental rights because parents have a concern about a choice that a juvenile is making that will affect the rest of their lives.
Absolutely, Tony. You know, this case, in so many ways, is so unprecedented. It's things like this that people like you and I have been warning for years about what's happening with the growth of government and the intrusion of the government in family life, that we've been saying this is coming, and now we actually see it come into fruition in Cincinnati, where this judge is. There's, from all indications, and a lot of the court records are sealed, but from all indications from the judge's decision that came out Friday, there were no other mitigating factors here, only the fact that this kid wanted to take dangerous and untested puberty-suppressing drugs, and the parents decided, no, that's not the best course for you. And just because of that decision, that was enough for the county to move to take away the child. I mean, that is truly government intrusion into our lives.
Now, Aaron, I want to be clear on something you said. There are no other circumstances. There's no allegations of abuse by the parents. The parents have done nothing wrong in this case. It's just an issue of a teenager wanting to go through a transition from being a female to a male, and the court has interjected itself and said, we're going to give custody to someone else.
From what we can tell right now, because most of the court records here are sealed, what we can tell from what the court has actually put out, that seems to be the case. The judge at one point said the county filed neglect and abuse charges against the parents, but then dropped those charges. And you typically don't see those types of things where those charges get dropped if there is actual neglect or abuse. It feels like the county was kind of posturing to threaten the parents to get them to back off on this. Which, from all we're seeing, the parents have done their best to stand by the kid, to look out for their child. They've allowed the child, because the child's asked to live with the maternal grandparents, they've allowed the child to live with the grandparents who are more pushing this transgender ideology. They've allowed the child to live there because that's where they want to be, but they just haven't consented to this dangerous and untested puberty-suppressing drugs so that the child can eventually go through gender transition surgery when they turn 18, which the parents realize they have no control to stop them beforehand, but after they turn 18.
So the court's actions on Friday paves the way for the hormone treatment to begin.
Absolutely, and that's the real horrifying aspect of this, is to, as a parent of small children, to imagine the government coming in and taking my kid or taking anyone's kid because they think the kid should be on puberty-suppressing drugs or any of these other drugs, which people like Ryan T. Anderson have spelled out time and time again how these drugs are untested, are not approved for this usage, and really can do long-term damage to children.
And the parents, according to the stories and their testimony, were trying to get help for their teenager, seeking counseling, Christian-based counseling, to which it appears that the court-appointed representative scoffed at the notion that religion was playing a factor in here, in fact stating that the child was made to listen to the Bible for 6 hours at one sitting. Of course, the average teen watches about 9 hours of social media and television in a day's period, so I'm not sure where the torture is in that, as they would imply.
Right. Well, and Tony, I think you're narrowing in on something that where this is about parental rights and religious freedom, where apparently having a Christian worldview is equivalent to neglect and abuse, is really what the county is angling here. And the reality is, the facts are, the parents were actually taking the responsible approach by not pushing the kid into taking these puberty-suppressing drugs, because you know the research shows that 80% of children that identify with gender dysphoria at some point will naturally, just on their own, realign with their biological sex. So why would you start putting them on drugs that can do permanent damage just because at some point or another they feel confused?
If you want to find out more about the work Aaron is doing at Citizens for Community Values, just head on over to tonyperkins.com and follow the links. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, and you can donate when you visit tonyperkins.com. We'll be back with a few words from Tony Perkins.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. This is because transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. Yet even the federal government has stated that there is no evidence that gender reassignment surgery has improved health outcomes. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. In the wake of the terrible tragedy that unfolded at a high school in Parkland, Florida, there's been a renewed outcry for the banning of guns as a solution to mass murder. Here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
The president said something today that kind of prompted me to think of something. He was talking about these active shooter drills. I've got a clip of what he said in one of these listening sessions.
Active shooter drills is a very negative thing. I'll be honest with you. If I'm a child and I'm 10 years old and they say, we're going to have an active shooter drill, I say, what's that? Well, people may come in and shoot you. I think that's a very negative thing to be talking about, to be honest with you. I don't like it. I'd much rather have a hardened school. I don't like it. I wouldn't want to tell my son that you're going to participate in an active shooter drill. And I know some of them actually call it that. I think it's crazy. I think it's very bad for children.
The president does not leave you guessing as to where he stands on something. But when he said that, it prompted me to think of something. You know, today school children participate in these active shooter drills. It happens all the time. It's much like their grandparents had their duck and cover exercises, preparing for the Russians to drop a bomb on us in the midst of the Cold War. Now, but this time the threat is not from without, but rather it's from within. And as I was thinking about this, at the height of the Cold War, when the kids were ducking under their desk in what was only a placebo for the fear that had really become a part of everyday life in America, our leaders chose not only to enhance our military defenses, harden the target, look what else they did. They appealed to God. On February 7th, 1954, there was a pastor in New York at the New York Avenue Presbyterian Church in Washington, the Reverend George Dougherty. He delivered a sermon on the subject of the Pledge of Allegiance, Now, it just so happened President Eisenhower was sitting in the front row, and the Reverend declared that, quote, apart from the mention of the little phrase, the United States of America, it could be the pledge of any republic. I could hear little Muscovites repeat a similar pledge to their hammer and sickle flag in Moscow. Russia is also a republic, he said, that claims to have overthrown the tyranny of kingship. Russia also claims to be indivisible, end quote. Well, 3 days after that message that Eisenhower heard on that Sunday morning, a bill was introduced into Congress to add the words under God to our pledge. And then on June 14th, which happened to be Flag Day, 1954, Eisenhower signed that bill into law. And here is what he said. Quote, from this day forward, millions of schoolchildren will daily proclaim the dedication of our nation and our people to the Almighty, end quote. That's no longer the case today. And I ask, is there a correlation? We can harden the targets, but if God doesn't protect the city the builders have built in vain, folks, I'm willing to have that conversation about realistic, maybe gun control laws, raising the age to 21, with the exception of those who have served in our nation's military, willing to talk about the issue of mental illness, willing to talk about hardening the targets, willing to talk about all of that. But we cannot have that conversation unless we're willing to talk about the fact that America has lost its way, that we have rejected the Creator, and the creation has turned on itself. I invite anyone, sit down, let's have that conversation. Our children are our future. They're far too valuable to continue just drawing political lines and standing on one side or the other. But if we want to talk about access to guns, we got to talk about access to God. And it's not happening in our schools today.
You can find more on all of the topics we talked about on Washington Watch when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to TonyPerkins.com and clicking on the Donate button. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.